Stillman & Company, delivered by TriStar Moving Fireball, Hot Take Friday, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Caroline Fenton, there are rules when you cover practice about things you can say and things you can't say and things you can report on and things you can't report on.
Yep.
Like, for example, you can't talk about a coach yelling at a player. You can't say, this coach yelled at this player, so I can't tell you what Mike Vrabel yelled at, you know, when they were talking about certain things. But then once it gets discussed somewhere else, then I can talk about it. So when NFL Network apologized to Vrabel for Ian Rappaport talking to Taylor Lewan while he was supposed to be working hard on the bike, and Vrabel ripped his rear end, you know, that's now public knowledge, so we talk about it. But you can't talk about who lines up where. So let me just state for the record that as I give away the starting 22, this is who I think is starting on defense for the Titans and offense week one against the Arizona Cardinals. This is all based upon what I've seen at practice, and this is not reporting what they have done at practice. So I just want to state that for the record. But I think without further ado, it's time for me to reveal what I believe the starting 22 against Arizona will be. And let's start on offense because, well, that's the most fun. I think the Titans. Taylor Lewan will start at left tackle. Roger Saffold, left guard. No surprise there. Ben Jones at center. Nate Davis at right guard. And I am going to go with Ty Sambrylo as the Titans' starting right guard. The other options are Kendall Lamb, David Quessenberry, or Dylan Raidens. Let me start with this. I don't think Raidens has any chance of being the starter at right tackle. I think Vrabel has basically gone out of his way to tell us that Raidens has no shot at starting at right tackle. And Raidens didn't play football last year at North Dakota State because of COVID. They played one game, and so maybe it's bringing him along slowly. A part of me wonders if they're going to have him pegged more as a guard. Trevor Maddich says that he sees Raidens more as a guard. We've seen Raidens at guard at training camp. He really has to improve. So he's out. So then there's Lamb and Quessenberry. I think they believe in Quessenberry more than Lamb, but Vrabel said everyone's going to get a shot. But I think Sambrylo, after the job he did in for Lewan last year, I think they think that he can start in the NFL. So I think that's the move they're going to go with, is Ty Sambrylo as the starting right tackle. And remember, last week when Vrabel was asked about right tackle, he said, well, let's wait till Ty gets back and when Ty gets in there. So I'm going to go Sambrylo at right tackle. So that means Chandler Jones, if he plays, J.J. Watt against Lewan and Ty Sambrylo. Wide receivers, A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, and I still have Josh Reynolds in there. Now, Reynolds is a question mark for me because he got hurt. We don't know what it was. I think it's a shoulder. But he got hurt, and he's been on the elliptical at practice ever since. They won't tell you how long he's going to be out. They're not going to give you any idea. But he's not A.J. Brown or Julio Jones. So is his spot secure even though he's been hurt and not practicing? If it's not Reynolds in the slot, I think it's Chester Rogers who would get that nod. So that would be the first kind of surprise into the starting lineup, would be Chester Rogers if Josh Reynolds doesn't go. But that's the route I think they would go to start with, is Brown, Jones, Reynolds, or Chester Rogers. And I'd go Rogers over Marcus Johnson, because Rodgers, I think, will be the punt returner. Tight end, Anthony Firkser, no surprise there. If they go to a two tight end set, Jeff Swaim has been hurt all of camp. They signed Luke Stocker, which is, I don't believe, is a good sign for Jeff Swaim. But I'm going to put Tommy Hudson in as tight end number two. Hudson's long, he's lean, he's caught the ball some in camp. Tannehill hit him today, I believe, in the two-minute drill. So even Tannehill, I asked him today about the tight ends and trust outside of Anthony Firkser, and he brought up Tommy Hudson. So that is a name of a guy who keeps showing up in training camp, so I've got him penciled in as the tight end too. Running back, this is a real shocker.
Shocker there.
Derrick Henry will be the running back of the Titans, though I said this when I went on with Chase in the midday show today. I think Darrington Evans is not only going to be the third down back, I think he's the backup running back. Like, if knock on wood, something were to happen to Henry, or he would be on a pitch count, they're not going to bring in Brian Hill to run the football. I think they would run the ball with Darrington Evans. So I think he's the backup running back, and I think he's the third down running back. Ryan Tannehill is the starting quarterback. Logan Woodside's the backup. Don't read into them signing Matt Barkley, even though Vrabel said today it was to compete with Logan. It's not. I think they just need someone to get through these preseason games. Because when they take Logan out of the preseason game, they're not putting Tannehill in. So I think that, it's Tannehill and Logan, and Barkley will play in the preseason. Any questions on offense?
All sounds good to me.
Defense. Denico Autry will start at one of the three defensive line positions, as will Jeffrey Simmons, the nose tackle. And I have Tyre Tarte starting as the third defensive lineman. Now, they run a lot of a 5-2 look, a 2-5 look, more than the traditional 3-4. But I'm going to go with three defensive linemen, Tyre Tarte over Larrell Murchison. But I think that not only will Tarte be there, Murchison will be in the rotation, and I wouldn't be surprised if, in addition to those guys, Trevon Coley, number 97, works his way into the rotation as well. I'd keep an eye on him. Outside linebacker, Harold Landry, surprise, surprise, and Bud Dupree. But I think there's a big key with these guys, which is this year, instead of carrying three outside linebackers to the game on a given Sunday, I think they're going to carry four or five with the idea that they could move Rashad Weaver from whether it's a hand in the ground defensive line position or to an outside linebacker position. But I think they're going to have Derek Roberson backing up Harold Landry and John Simon, whom they recently signed. He's played in New England. He's played in Indianapolis. He's played in Houston. I think he'll be behind Dupree. So we'll see a steady rotation of guys. Maybe it's because I want it that I'm going to say they're going to rotate in Murchison and they're going to rotate in Trevon Coley and they're going to rotate in Rashad Weaver and Roberson and Simon. But Landry and Dupree, I think, started outside linebacker. Inside linebacker, this isn't difficult. Jayon Brown, Rashawn Evans. Anybody goes down, David Long Jr., who's filled in for Brown the last 2 years, goes into the mix there. Corner one, Jackrabbit Jenkins. I think that's his spot. He's not giving it up. Nobody's challenging him for that spot. He is the starting corner. Corner two was a question mark. Let me ask you this question. Who would you go with as the second corner opposite Jackrabbit right now?
Christian Fulton.
So I thought about it. I'm going to go Caleb Farley. And here's why I'm going to go Caleb Farley. Because I think they want Farley to win that job. I think they want Farley to be that guy outside. You don't draft a guy with questionable medicals if you're not going to play him. And I don't think his injury and Jeffrey Simmons' injury are similar. Everybody wants to make them out to be similar because they were both drafted while injured. Simmons was an ACL. We've seen ACLs all the time. This is a back injury. It's different. I don't think Farley gets on the field, much less off the PUP list. I don't think he gets on the field in shoulder pads if that back's not ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
So it's August 6th. I think that back's ready to go. They drafted him to play, just like when they drafted Simmons, and he was coming along slowly, and they took him off the PUP list, and he went out there on defense, and first game he's in there. And I think that's what's going to happen with Caleb Farley. So I think he starts over Fulton. And for no other reason, I think it's the physical tools. I don't think they're comparable. I think Fulton's going to be a fine defensive back. But he's kind of short, squatty legs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got speed to him. But Farley is long and lean. And the way I would tell people, Farley looks to me like a taller version of Cortland Finnegan. And so I think Farley starts week one at the corner position. Kevin Byard and Amani Hooker are your starting safeties. That, I think, again,
pretty straightforward.
Let me say this about Hooker. I think there's a chance Hooker's going to have a breakout year. I mean, I think there is a chance, from what I've seen at training camp, that Hooker becomes that dude this year. Like, I am sold on Amani Hooker. And you've noticed, I haven't gotten caught up in the Ferkser hype,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't gotten caught up in the Jeffrey Simmons hype, and I haven't gotten caught... Hooker? I think Hooker's fantastic. Now is where we get a little technical. Nickel corner. Chris Jackson. Last year, he started outside when the Titans had injury issues, and he's gotten better. He's healthy this year. He's gained weight. I think that there's going to be an interesting battle. If Farley is starting outside, the natural thing to do would be to move Christian Fulton inside, and I would put Fulton over Jackson. But because I think right now Fulton's an outside guy, Jackson starts as the nickel corner over Elijah Molden, but it could be a solid three-way battle between Fulton, Jackson, and Molden in order to win that nickel spot. And then I think whoever loses that ends up playing the Amani Hooker role from last year. When they go to a dime package, you would see, let's say it's Fulton, right? So Titans are going to run five DBs on the field. You'll have Fulton, you'll have Farley, you'll have Jenkins, Hooker, Byard, and if you run a sixth out there, then I think it's Chris Jackson or Molden. And I think there's going to be a battle there. Right now, Jackson over Molden. Though I could see Molden overtaking Jackson. Molden's a little small, he's inexperienced, and right now I feel like Jackson is making more plays out there than Elijah Molden. Any thoughts on defense?
I like it.
I kind of think I've just made it pretty obvious.
It's, and it's pretty clear, but in, with the Caleb Farley injury, I think that was such a big question mark, but you do make a good point that if he's out there in pads and practicing, then I'm sure that they feel good for him, with him for week one.
Now, special teams. Kick returner. And I do wonder this question. How much do people care about kick returner nowadays? Because the kick returns are so whatever, but I think that Darrington Evans is going to be your kick returner. That, I think, is pretty simple. Take a knee. Chester Rogers, I have as the punt returner over Cameron Batson. Now, Batson doesn't have a lot of experience returning punts in games, but I think they could put him back there. Batson, going into today, Rogers was clearly ahead of Batson, and it wasn't even close.
Did you not sell on Chester Rogers returning punts when I asked you yesterday?
No, I think I bought on
that. Did you buy on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Chester Rogers is part of it.
Yeah, right.
But Batson made a case today for himself. I mean, Batson made some big catches, including one from Tannehill in the two-minute drill that was a huge gain that put them into field goal range. But I'm still going Rogers over Batson. Plus, Chester Rogers has more experience as a punt returner than Cam Batson does in the NFL. Punter is Brett Kern. Kicker, I put not here yet. So I think I've gotten as good of a vantage point as anybody on the kickers they've had in camp so far. I don't think either guy is going to be the kicker for the Titans. I don't think they want to go to Goskowski. I think everyone's going to bring up Goskowski. So does that mean they'll go back and get Goskowski? I don't think they want to go to Goskowski. I think they would like to see a veteran get cut somewhere else, lose a kicking battle, and then sign that veteran to be their kicker. So we've always talked about the situation a couple of years ago where Cairo Santos beat out Ryan Succop in Kansas City, and the Titans signed Ryan Succop. That, I think, is what the Titans want to do. They'll take the best released kicker in the NFL. So those are your starters for the Titans. At least to me, right now, that's who's starting week one.
Did we see Zane Gonzalez out there yet today?
No, Zane Gonzalez is not a member of the Titans. He worked out yesterday.
Worked out.
They tried him out, but he is not a member of the Titans. He cannot be out there on that practice field.
Okay. Them.
Now, if they release Tucker McCann and they sign Zane Gonzalez, then he can be out there. But as of right now, they just worked him out, which is probably just to get him in the database so they know, okay, this is what he's capable of doing or what he's not doing. I think they want Ficken now to win the job, but I think they also know that it's probably not likely. Mm-hmm. I don't see either of the guys there winning that job. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get to your Titans reaction. 615-737-1025. And I wouldn't rule out Chris Jackson as a name that I just keep throwing out there because he's a guy I keep seeing pop up out here at training camp practices. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Now, the Titans play a preseason game one day from today. But that will be the first opportunity the fans get to see this team. But how much will Vrabel give us an idea of what they're actually trying to do, especially as the lineup is concerned? We'll discuss next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app, live from the Whole Sonic Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Catch us on Twitter, on Periscope, YouTube, where the live stream is, which I screwed up in the last segment, by the way. That's Stillman & Company, delivered by TriStar Moving on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
How important is it to practice when you're trying to get the offense better, but certain guys aren't out here? I know each guy is on an individual plan, but how does the offense as a whole get better when so many key pieces are missing?
I mean, there's going to be times during the season where we don't have guys, and we've been through that. So we got to get the next guy ready and continue to push through and see who takes advantage of their opportunities and who goes back out there and who works with whatever group. So, we'd like to have everybody, but the reality of that happening throughout the year is probably not likely. So we'll just coach the guys that show up and that can practice each day.
There you go. That was Mike Vrabel today. No Derrick Henry, no Taylor Lewan, no Ty Sam Brilo, no Julio Jones, no Nate Davis, no Roger Saffold, no Ben Jones. So that could, in theory, mean no starting offensive line. It was Tannehill, Firkser, A.J. Brown, and then everybody else.
A.J. out there grinding every day in practice.
Which is surprising that a guy who had both knees operated on this offseason is out there every day at practice. But as we go through the starters for Arizona, we know that Dylan Raidens is not going to be starting. Daniel Munyer, who can't even snap the ball cleanly, he's not going to be starting against the Arizona Cardinals. We know that. Bud Dupree, Caleb Farley, elevated up off the pup list this week, off the, I guess in the case of Farley, the non-football injury list. They're available. How much do you think Vrabel's going to show in the preseason? Because I'm sitting here talking about, like, I think Sam Brilo's going to start at right tackle. I think guys like Simon and Roberson and Weaver are going to rotate in at outside linebacker. I think they're going to see Chris Jackson as the starting nickel. How much of that do you think Vrabel will show in the preseason? How much do you think Vrabel will play the starters in the preseason? How would you take games 1, 2, and 3? How would you do it? Normally it's been pretty traditional that the main guys go a little bit in the first game. They go a little tiny bit more in the second game. They go for about a half in the third game, and they don't play at all in the fourth game. That has traditionally been what most teams do. Some teams like the Rams and other teams, they just say, nope, 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 we're out of this. We're not doing any of this. What do you think Vrabel is going to do in the preseason? And how much of what is going to be decided is what is going to be decided in the preseason? Because when you're not practicing with all your guys, I don't know how you can decide these things right now.
I think that, with one fewer preseason game, I think that you're going to see a majority of your starters out there, your Ryan Tannehills, your A.J. Browns, your Julio Jones, your Derrick Henrys. I think you see them out there for about a half in the second game. Third game, I don't think they play at all. First game, you may see them sprinkled in and out of there. Ryan Tannehill maybe throwing to some receivers with less experience just to see what they look like out there against an actual team, against a defense when there's actually a game being played. The way that I have seen Mike Vrabel run practice in terms of who's practicing versus who is not, when Julio Jones and Derrick Henry and Taylor Lewan, and I know there's some injury issues mixed in there, but when your starters aren't practicing, I think you see him put them out there a bit in the second game just to make sure, you knock off all the rust. But I think Mike, at least what I would do if I was Mike Vrabel, is let those young guys get in there and get experience.
So I don't know what he's going to do. In the past, he's followed the traditional formula of the preseason, which is, as I said, you play a little bit, then you play a little bit more. You play a tiny bit, then you play a tiny bit more, then you play a lot more, then you don't play. Now, he pulled Mariota when they played that third preseason game in 2019, which is the last thing we have to go off of because there was no preseason last year because of COVID. He pulled Mariota after two series against the Steelers because he didn't want to get Mariota killed. And so he put Tannehill out there, and I think Tannehill finished the half, and then I believe Logan or whomever else was out there probably finished out the game. And that's kind of what they rolled with. And now I'm trying to think back to it. Like that Patriot game, Logan Woodside played a lot of. Tannehill played most of the first half. Mariota played, I think, a series that first game against the Eagles. He played a series. And then Tannehill played the rest of the first half. And I remember my dad then was like, I think Tannehill's the better quarterback. And I'm like, Dad, stop saying crazy stuff like that. It's ridiculous. Come on now.
Dad, you're embarrassing me in front of my friends.
Yeah, like, Dad, come on now. And you know, then all of a sudden Tannehill's in the NFC Championship game. I'm trying to figure out what he did in the 2018 preseason. I mean, this is kind of like I watched last night, and I heard people making fun of Billy DiNucci, the quarterback for the Cowboys.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, that guy started a Sunday Night Football game last year. Like, we can laugh about it all we want about, ha, 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 Hall of Fame game, Billy DiNucci. But Mason Rudolph played last night.
Mm-hmm.
Dwayne Haskins played last night. Josh Dobbs threw a touchdown pass last night.
Astro Dobbs.
I mean, so they did some things. Like, I'm not trying to sit here and tell you, like, oh, this is all good or whatever. But, all right, here we go. Green Bay, first game of the preseason. In 2018, so this was Vrabel's first year. First drive, Mariota. Titans scored a touchdown. It was the Nick Williams touchdown. Or excuse me, Darius Williams touchdown off the Nick Williams pick. The second series, Blaine Gabbert fumbled. So one series for Mariota in that first preseason game. You think Tannehill goes in the first preseason game next week, next Friday against Arizona or against Atlanta?
If he does, it'll be maybe a quarter or less. I don't think they're necessary. I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of Tannehill.
See,
it's going to be a lot of Logan Woodside next week.
I think it's going to be like the first. I think he's going to treat the first game like the first game, the second game like the second game, and the third game like the fourth game. So that dress rehearsal game where you play your guys a half, he's not going to do.
See, I think that they're going to play the second game. They're going to play the starters a little bit more. Not a complete game by any means. Maybe not even a complete half, but at least a little bit, especially because those starters aren't practicing.
So here's why they're not going to do that. Because, and I've pulled up the 2019 Tampa Bay, or excuse me, 20, no, this is 2019. The 2019 Tampa Bay preseason game where Mariota played, but he didn't play a lot. So Mariota played the first series. Let's see, the second series. Mariota played the second series. The third series, David Flewellen, Blaine Gabbert. So the reason that I think he's do that is because they're practicing against Tampa Bay. So he will look at it like, I don't need to play the starters more because they got their work in those 2 days practicing against the Bucs. So I don't think you're going to see the third preseason game, the quote-unquote dress rehearsal. I don't think you're going to see that. That, I believe, is now gone. That is, and the third game's going to be Logan's going to play a series, mm-hmm. and then Matt Barkley's playing the rest of the game. And that's what they're going to do. Do you think that that's right? Do you think they should play more?
Considering how many injuries this team went into the season with, and I'm not saying that's reason to proceed with exorbitant amounts of caution, but I do think that you have to be a little bit more conservative with your players, especially considering the amount of injuries you came into the season with. And I don't think that's necessarily wrong, but I also don't think that Mike Vrabel, and I think that the second game, if any of them, I think that second game is going to be treated like traditionally the third game. And I don't think Mike Vrabel should necessarily go into that second game having a finite amount of time that he wants his starters to play. I think if it takes three quarters for them to get knock the rust off and to get their legs underneath them, then it takes three quarters. If it takes a half, it takes a half.
Yeah, but see, coaches don't think like that. Like, I know what you're saying.
I know.
The Titans had a third preseason game a couple of years ago against the Chicago Bears, and they freaking sucked. It was at Nissan Stadium. It was the middle of the day. They played the Chicago Bears, and it was embarrassing. I mean, like, I think they got booed at home, and I think it was an NFL Network game. And Mike Mularkey was so mad about how they played that he said he was going to make the starters play the fourth game. And I remember thinking, like, he is not going to make the starters play the fourth game. And then he did not have the starters play the fourth game. So, like, the idea of, well, if Vrabel doesn't like what he's seen, he's going to put them out there. No, he is not.
I don't think any of them will play game three.
If he doesn't like what he sees, he's going to play them less. He's not going to play them more. He's going to play them less. Like, he took Mariota out of that Pittsburgh game a couple of years ago when the line just didn't block for anybody. Like, he took Mariota out.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think you're going to see the preseason. I do wonder how much fans actually care about this. Like, how much, if you're a fan, do you care about how much the Titans play the guys in the preseason? Because, I mean, like, I've been a fan before. And while I would love to see Tannehill play an entire half in one of these preseason games and then be able to talk about it, I'm also, you know, I get it. I don't think I need to see Tannehill play a half.
I don't think so either. And to answer your question, I don't think fans care because it doesn't have any sort of implications. And I know that, you know, you could argue the fact that they need this experience in the preseason in order to play better in the regular season. I hear that. I don't think fans care.
I do wonder, though, because all I ever hear is fans cry about how much they hate preseason football.
Yeah, I don't think that they care about who plays.
So apparently there was like 20 times more betting on last night's Hall of Fame game, like on the digital apps, 20 times more betting on the Hall of Fame game than there was on the highest bet baseball game yesterday.
That doesn't surprise me because football's way more popular.
20 times more for the Hall of Fame game?
I mean, 20
told
times
you that
is a lot,
on
but
average,
I'm not really that shocked.
On average, the Hall of Fame game gets about 4 million viewers, and LeBron versus Steph Curry in a playoff game last year, in like an elimination playoff game, LeBron versus Steph Curry got 5. Like, that should tell you that
people are just starved for football, I think.
I don't think it's so much starved as much as it is they
like,
just like it more. And I bet they just crushed the Olympics. Have you had any interest in the Olympics?
So there was a guy that I used to dive with when I was growing up. He is in the Olympics, so I've tried to keep up with him just because I have personal stock in it. I've been watching swimming and diving.
Oh my
and
God.
What?
5.9 million viewers last night for the Hall of Fame game.
That's insane.
And this is in a society where the ratings have been going down
for
sports.
That's insane.
5.9 million viewers for the Hall of Fame game last night.
Wow.
That's more than LeBron versus Steph Curry.
And way more than an NBA Finals game this
year. No. It wasn't NBA Finals. Wasn't that like 11 million or 7 million or...
A game?
Yeah.
Per game or total? Not total.
No, total.
Per total.
Per game. So, I want to say...
Dang.
I'm trying to find this, what the NBA Finals ratings were, but 5.9 million viewers for the Hall of Fame game last night.
Do you think that whoever is being inducted into the Hall of Fame can guide eyes to the Hall of Fame game?
Nope.
Why
not? I think it has nothing to do with it because it's not about the Hall of Fame.
Like,
I know they
like,
bring on,
but
like,
there's so much talk about the Hall of Fame going into it. I mean, especially, you know, Peyton Manning, that's a name that as of late everyone knows. He's a young guy and he was such a popular player.
Yeah, but
so I wonder if people
that's what people get into. 9.9 million viewers in game one of the finals. Let's see what the lowest viewed game was this year. The lowest viewed game was 8.56 for game one. So 8.56 for game one this year. Game three of last year's NBA Finals. Now, again, this was COVID, and this was during football season. And game three, Lakers Heat, 5.9 million viewers.
That is crazy.
Same as the Hall of Fame game. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We will get to your thoughts next. 615-737-1025. Plus, there is some stock of guys at camp who are rising and stock of guys who are falling. So we'll discuss that as well. Stillman and Company right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Let me tell all the fine folks out there that tomorrow tune in for a special Grand Prix edition of Chasing Checkers with Chase McCabe at 9 a.m. Brought to you by Firestone, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Mercedes-Benz of Music City and European Collision and Repair. Stillman and Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Sets up, throws pass there, touchdown. Tyler Simmons. Dobbs just got rid of it, and Simmons got his head around, and the ball was waiting for him.
Yeah, really good job by Dobbs, knowing that he's going to take the hit. He's got pressure right in his face, and yet, yeah, he just focused downfield, sits in the pocket, delivers a perfect ball, you know, right on the money.
Are you happy with what you saw out of Dobbs?
I was, but not surprised. You know, he's been with us before and performed similarly when given an opportunity. Man, this guy is not going to back down from the competition. You guys keep asking me about, you know, Rudolph and Haskins, man. He's not going anywhere. We were in a training camp session set a number of years ago, and it was, you know, Jones and Rudolph, and Dobbs, and nobody was asking me about Dobbs, and it came out of me.
That was Mike Tomlin. Josh Dobbs with a touchdown pass. How? I mean, Josh Dobbs has been in the NFL now for like 4 years. I mean, it's not like he just left Tennessee.
It feels like it, though.
Well, I think 2017 was, if I'm not mistaken, I think 2017 was Dormandy and Garantano. 2018 was Pruitt's first year, Garantano. The second year, Garantano. Last year, Garantano. And because
Garantano
was
in college longer than Josh Dobbs has been removed from college.
And, well, I think they've been there for the same amount of time.
Garantano's been there. Was at Tennessee for what? 5 years? 6 years?
I think he was there for 5 years, maybe. Redshirted the first, and then last year was like a freebie year
because of
COVID. So now he's at Washington State or whatever, Rutgers or wherever he's at.
Washington State.
And he's playing that last year. So I'm going to say
like
this.
30?
Garantano?
Yeah.
No, but he's probably like 24.
Okay.
Do you think Josh Dobbs, and I mean, I can't see the Steelers keeping Josh Dobbs. Now, the practice squad rules are the same as they were last year, so you can keep a veteran player on the practice squad. But my guess is that either Haskins or Rudolph is going to be the backup in Pittsburgh, and the other guy goes to the practice squad. Now, I think Rudolph stinks, but I also think Haskins stinks, and I thought Haskins stunk last night. But we always hear people ask this question. Do you think that the Titans, after training camp's over, can release Matt Barkley, which is what they'll do, and then maybe put him back on the practice squad? Or do you think if Josh Dobbs gets released, that you would take the risk of putting Dobbs on your practice squad? Because we always get that call like once every 3 months. Somebody calls in and asks about, what about Josh Dobbs? So I'm going to say it since he had a touchdown last night.
Mm-hmm.
What about Josh Dobbs? Perhaps one day being the backup to Tannehill and the Titans.
I don't see Josh Dobbs being the number one backup to anyone in the NFL.
But nobody thought that about Logan Woodside. I don't even think people think that about Logan Woodside now.
That's probably fair.
I've been at practice every day except last Saturday. Mm-hmm. So they've practiced, what, 11 times? I've been to 9 or 10 of them. I'm telling you, Logan Woodside's the backup quarterback of the Tennessee Titans. Like, and I knew that after the second practice you asked me, do you think the Titans have made up their mind on Kaiser and Woods? Mm-hmm. And I said, yes. I think they made up their mind. Woodside's the backup. And I didn't talk to the assistant coaches today, but TD told me that that's pretty much what Pat O'Hara, the quarterback coach, said when they asked about, or I think it was Gentry Estes maybe that told me that. They asked Pat O'Hara, like, what do you guys see in Logan? And it was basically like, you know, we trust him. And I've told you, I think Vrabel trusts Logan Woodside. So if something were to happen to Tannehill and you were to be playing a Sunday upcoming against the San Francisco 49ers on that Thursday night and Woodside's going in at quarterback, we'd all be panicking thinking, oh, dear God, not Logan Woodside. And I'm telling you, I think Vrabel's like, nah, I think Logan can get the job done. Nah, I don't think he thinks that he can do it as well as Tannehill. But I think he thinks Logan can get the wood can get the wood done. Logan can get the job done. But well, I so I'm just saying, like, you bring Dobbs in, you put him in the practice squad for a year like you did Kaiser. Then next year you let him and Logan battle it out for the backup spot.
I don't think it would hurt the Titans. Adam Coleman, who covers the NFL for The Athletic, says that Mason Rudolph looks like the favorite to be the number two spot, and then I would have to think that Dwayne Haskins would be underneath him. But, I mean, I'm not going to say it would hurt the Titans at all. I don't think that you're going to see Josh Dobbs play as a starter or play as a quarterback in a Tennessee Titans uniform anytime soon, barring any unforeseen circumstances. But if the Titans do decide to pick him up, put him on the practice squad, just hold him there and develop him a little bit. I mean, I don't think it's the craziest idea in the world. I just would not put my money on it happening.
So the one thing I will say, and we talked about this off air before the show, which is, I do appreciate what Josh Dobbs did at UT.
Oh, yeah.
And I hope that doesn't get forgotten, because Josh Dobbs might be the single most important Tennessee football player of the last 15 years. Since they lost to LSU in the SEC championship game in, I believe, 2002, that was the last great Tennessee team. Albert Haynesworth, John Henderson, Kelly Washington, Dante Stallworth, one of the Clawson brothers, I think, was at quarterback. They beat LSU in the SEC championship game. They go to play Miami in the national title game. They lost, so it ended up being Nebraska who got slaughtered by Miami. But that was the last great Tennessee team. Since then, Josh Dobbs is, I believe, the most important Tennessee football player over that entire period. So I have respect for it, but I also just don't see him much of as a pro quarterback. And I know he's stuck around, and he's a competitor, like Tomlin said, and he's obviously a smart guy since he's a freaking astronaut, but I don't think he's much of a pro quarterback. And if he was, then he'd have a shot to make the Steelers, and he's been with the Steelers now for the last handful of years, and he's never had a shot to make the Steelers.
If you're behind Mason Rudolph and Dwayne Haskins, that's kind of telling of something.
I'll say this. Haskins has a lot of Kaiser in him. You know, high draft pick, played in a big school, no good. Is it really his fault, or was it his crummy organization in Washington's fault? And now he's in Pittsburgh. So, I don't know. Make of it what you will. Headlines with Caroline coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025 here on Stillman and Company. Let me tell all the fine folks out there that...
Super important thing you have to tell them.
Nashville SC fans join ESPN 94.9 this Monday, August 9th from 7 to 8 for the NSC Backstage featuring Nashville SC players and coaches. Watch the show online via 1025 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. NSC Backstage brought to you by Camarena Tequila, the official tequila of Nashville SC. Stillman & Company Grand Prix is in town. Caroline Fenton's throwing out the first pitch tomorrow night at the Nashville Sounds game. So a lot to get into because it's headlines with Caroline.
We're spanning the sports world. It's headlines with Caroline on Stillman & Company. Right here on Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Elbows, my bad.
First and foremost, happy ESPN The Ocho Day to you and to all of our listeners. I watched a little bit of juggling dodgeball last night. So thrilling athletic competitions on ESPN today.
I'm a no fun guy. I don't get into it.
You are no fun.
I think it's all bullcrap.
I don't care.
I could care one. I could not give one poop about that.
It's what got me through the early stages of COVID last year. They just played like slippery stairs and pizza dough throwing and sign twirling. I tried that. I tried sign twirling one time. Incredibly difficult. So, I mean, props to all the people who can do it.
But isn't that like an inside joke off of a movie that, you know, like...
Yeah, at the movie Dodgeball, they put the dodgeball competition on ESPN The Ocho, and ESPN just, like, adopted it as a fun thing to do. But apparently you hate fun things and good things.
I just look at that as, like, get back to work. You know what I mean?
All right, well, then I will get back to sports.
I don't mean, like, you get back to work. I mean, like, to ESPN. Get back to work. Like, get...
Shut up and play, ESPN.
Get back to work.
Shut up and play.
Just get back to work.
Okay, so I have some women's updates from the Olympics. First and foremost, the U.S. women's basketball team is that much closer to winning their seventh consecutive gold medal. They beat Serbia today 79-59, so they will compete for that gold medal on Saturday night against Japan. I believe that game is on at 9:30 Central Time. Also, Allyson Felix became the most decorated woman in the history of Olympic track when she won her 10th Olympic gold medal in the 400 meter today. She won a bronze medal. So she matches Carl Lewis, who also won 10 medals and was alone as the most decorated U.S. track Olympian of all time. So he's the most decorated man. She's the most decorated woman. And Paavo Nurmi of Finland is the all-time record holder with Olympic medals in track with 12 from the 1920s.
You think if we played with four and the other countries got to play with five, we'd lose a game in women's basketball?
If we played with four and they played with five, I think we'd still win.
I do too. Like, because we have Breanna Stewart and they don't.
And she, Breanna Stewart, Sue Bird, Diana Taurasi.
Well, like, Sue's my girl, but she's kind of old.
Okay, but she's still a dog.
Like, she's still, like, she's kind of old. Like,
you do lunges with someone in khakis once and all of a sudden she's a
girl.
Hey,
no, let me tell you something. That's right. So that story was about me and Megan Rapinoe, because Megan Rapinoe was at that bar hanging out with me and Sue Bird. Dude, Sue Bird, I love Sue Bird. Like, I will, let me just say this about Sue Bird.
We just called her old.
Well, yeah, she's old for basketball. She knows that. Sue Bird is like, and I know what this is going to sound like. I know what I'm about to say is going to sound like on the air to people is like, oh, here's Jared, like, just bragging about how he's hanging out with Sue Bird one time. Let me just say this. Sue Bird, every single person that I know in women's basketball that's close with Sue, and I'm just going to, like, venture to guess that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like, they love her, and I love her. Like, I love Sue Bird. And so, like, she's, like, kind of political. And so you may be one of these people that just doesn't like anybody who says anything political in sports, and you can like whatever you want. I'm just telling you that Sue Bird is freaking cool, and I just want that out. What's next?
Also, we saw the speaking of Sue Bird and Megan Rapinoe, we saw the U.S. Women's National Team claim the bronze medal in soccer the other day. They lost.
Unacceptable.
They lost to Canada, which in the semifinal, which knocked them out of the possibility of winning the gold. But Canada just clinched the gold medal when they defeated Sweden in PKs, defeated them 3-2. This is Canada's first ever gold medal in women's soccer. Does that make us feel a little bit better that the U.S. got beat by Canada and then Canada wins the gold medal? Because I feel like there's a little silver lining in there.
I don't want to talk about it.
I'm sorry. I know that that's a point of contention for you.
We shouldn't lose at women's soccer.
That's our thing.
We shouldn't lose
at women's
soccer.
Nothing else, that's our thing.
First of all, women's basketball is better than women's soccer. We're going to have 7 gold medals in a row in women's basketball.
Yeah, that's insane.
Like, and I told you, we play with 4, they play with 5. I still
think so, too.
What's next?
So, a little bit of NFL news. Veteran offensive lineman Zach Fulton has announced that he will retire from the NFL. Why is that important? Because he is the 3rd New York Giant to retire in the past 4 days. Joe Looney, Todd Davis, lineman, linebacker, respectively, also retired this week. Tight end Kevin Benjamin said he was done with football after being released from the Giants.
Well, he got
too
fat.
Well, yeah, he came to practice overweight.
He was like 18 pounds overweight.
Yeah, Joe Judge was like, we needed you. I think it was at 250. You're at 265. Get out of here.
Now, let me say this, though. What did I tell you like 3 days ago? I think Joe Judge is in the running to be the first NFL coach fired this year. And this is an example.
That's fair.
Like the, I think I saw, you know, I think Pat McAfee said today that basically what it is these guys are old and they're not going to do freaking push-ups in their pads.
Yeah, I mean, they're running wind sprints and push-ups, like up-downs. Like, what is this?
So are the Giants doing up-downs? I know the Lions are doing up-downs.
The Lions are as well, but they're running all of these sprints. There's got to be something going on. I mean, 3 players in 4 days that are like, I'd rather not play this sport anymore than play for you.
Yeah, Joe Judge, I think, is very firmly. I mean, it's so funny because, like, the Patriots won the Super Bowl with it, the year that they came back against the Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
With Josh McDaniels as the offensive coordinator. Bill Belichick's head coach. Josh McDaniels is offensive coordinator. He flamed out as head coach at Denver because he tried to be too Johnny Tough guy. Matt Patricia is defensive coordinator. He flamed out in Detroit because he was too my way or the highway. And Joe Judge was the special teams coordinator, and he's going to get fired in New York for being too my way or the highway. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe bring it down a notch, guys. What it's telling me is that you can't go somewhere else and try to be Belichick. Just like Jeremy Pruitt can't go to Tennessee and not do interviews and call out the fans for not going to the spring game and try to have that work. Like, you can't be Saban when you're not Saban.
Right.
And so I think that's kind of what we've learned there. Those are headlines with Caroline. Coming up next, Hall of Fame weekend. I'm not a huge Hall of Fame guy. Like, I get mad about it. I can always have the discussion about who gets in and who gets out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I enjoy, like, the February Hall of Fame discussion when it is, does this guy belong in over that guy? But Peyton Manning gets into the Hall of Fame, and I've got thoughts, and I'm sure you've got thoughts, you the people, on Peyton getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. And why I think now is the opportunity for us to truly cherish Peyton's memory as a football player. That's next. Stillman & Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. FanDuel Sportsbook. That's my official sportsbook app. One of the things I love about betting on FanDuel is you get more than one shot to swing for the fences. Right now, new users can get up to $25 back in site credit. each day, just place a minimum five-leg baseball parlay, and if it falls one leg short, you get up to $25 back with parlay insurance. There is a reason why FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook app and why it's my number one sportsbook app. The app is simple to use, and they've got great odds on different betting markets, unique fun bet types like same-game parlays and always-on promotions to let you get more action out of every game day. When you win, FanDuel will pay you your winnings in as little as 24 hours. In addition to the parlay insurance, if you haven't tried FanDuel Sportsbook, new users can get your first bet risk-free. That's right. New users can get up to $1,000 back in site credit if your first bet doesn't win. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and use the promo code JGM. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code JGM. 21 and older and present in Tennessee, first online real money wager only for risk-free bet. Refund issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund, $25 per game. Restrictions apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789.